about you, Terry Wallace?
Hello, Andy. How did you enjoy? I mean, it's a long period for you over the weekend, but how did you enjoy it all?
Loved it. Yeah. Loved it. It's the next best thing to being there. We're on air a lot, but we were sort of just doing the links, you know, back and forth and then throwing it to the... But it's for me, I don't know whether you've got one each year, suspect it might be... I don't know, something to do with footy, but it is the week of the year that I probably look forward to, the weekend of the year I probably look forward to more than any other.
I'm spring carnival.
Yeah, okay, right.
Yeah, I love it. Just absolutely love the spring.
Yeah, outside of footy. It's just awesome, and it's an event that there was a period there, it would have been, I don't know, about 3 o'clock on Monday morning our time, so about halfway through the final round, and this is one of the truisms of that tournament. It just seemed to be meandering along a little bit. Nothing was really happening. Molinari was a couple clear, might have got three clear at one stage, wasn't making any mistakes. It looked like it was going to be a fairly mild, tame sort of procession.
Then all of a sudden a couple of them started to find the water.
Mate, at the moment you thought about it, all hell broke loose.
Yep.
And blokes who were out of contention 20 minutes ago were suddenly making eagles and birdies, and there's three or four blokes who were in that leading, hitting it in the water wherever they saw it. It was phenomenal. So I think Jason Day is going to be overlooked in the whole thing. And maybe we'll get to this a bit later on. He's in at one of these this notion of being on the clock in your career, no matter what it might be, whether it be a team or an individual, whether it be a coach or a player, that notion of when you're on the clock, because Jason Day's body is, he's only 31, but he's got a body that's...
Banged up, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And it's letting him down. So he's got to make the most of opportunities when they present themselves, I think, because I'm not sure he's going to be able to keep playing the way he plays for an awfully long time to come.
His wife has told him he's got to toughen up a little bit.
And he did,
exactly.
To his credit. He could hardly walk in the opening round. Anyway, that's by the by.
Now, I'll just say one thing. I mean, you've been a very busy man. You've been, whether it's your AFLW duties, the golf, you really do start to need to sit down and concentrate on the footy, because I picked up another three on you on the weekend.
Honestly, I've never been – look, I don't really define myself by the number of winners I tip in the footy. But this is the hardest year. I can't get near it this year. The ones that I give an extra week's faith to, I should have taken it off them. The ones that I say, no, show me something before I tip you, North Melbourne, I get it wrong. So the North Melbourne-Adelaide game was a classic case for me. My gut said, and the closer we got to the game, I did Saturday afternoon footy at the G. Was it the G? It was at the G. And I thought, by the time we got there, I thought, oh, no, I'm liking, the closer we get to game time, the more I like North Melbourne.
That's virtually the same what happened to me. I've got to put my tips in for the footy record on a Monday. And on Monday I went Adelaide, and then the more I looked at it, and Gibbs out, and by the time we did, certainly by the time we did the match committee on Thursday night, and then before the games on Friday, I was north.
Yeah,
absolutely,
100%.
Yep. So I tipped them on everything late in the week, but the footy record still says Adelaide. So you can't sort of get it all right. But the ladder is the one that still fascinates me. We've got sides.
I don't like looking at the ladder at the moment, Terry.
You got sides that you wouldn't. Now I can understand why.
I don't like the ladder. The ladder makes it bad reading at the moment.
Got sides that you just wouldn't have dreamed. I mean, top eight: Brisbane, St Kilda, Gold Coast, and Fremantle.
Yeah.
Inside the top eight. How many of those four? And I'm not asking you necessarily to name them. You can if you want. So it's Brisbane, St Kilda, Gold Coast, Fremantle. How many will be there by the end of the year?
None.
None.
Well, I don't think any of them. You think any of them will be?
I think one.
Which one?
Well, I knew you were going to ask me that.
You can't just pick one and just not know which one you think it's going to be.
In the basket of four, I think probably one will survive.
Yeah, but have you got one of the four?
Okay, Brisbane would say. Just because I think that they'll win enough Gabba games, three wins early, win enough Gabba games, it might just...
Okay.
Sneak them in.
Well, here's the hypothetical. What if on Thursday night they get poleaxed up there? Does it change your mind a bit?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a high quality side they're going to run in.
And it's a moving.
Yeah,
it's a moving beast.
Yep. It is. This is the dream scenario coming true, isn't it? It seems like there's occasionally a bit of an outrider.
Any
like,
given Sunday? Is that
any
the
given yeah. Sunday, yeah. Terry. Yeah. I mean, last year Richmond win 18 during the home and away season. They were clearly two games better and a significant percentage than anyone else, but that didn't carry through once we got to September.
Yeah.
But right now, honestly, this is the dream come true for the AFL.
But isn't this just smart by the AFL as well? Oh, look, yep. I know we're getting upsets left, right and centre and tipping's very difficult and it's all over the shop who wins on any given week. But they still, the AFL, were smart enough to put all the good sides against all the good sides in the first few rounds and all the what was perceived to be the inferior sides from last year playing against each other, hence Carlton versus the Gold Coast, so that some of those sides can get wins on the board early. I mean, Gold Coast, if we go back to last year, I mean, Gold Coast are on three wins now. They won two of their first three last year well, but that's the fixturing.
Yep.
I mean, that'll start to balance itself out, and all of a sudden you're going to start getting top sides playing perceived weaker sides as the season rolls on, but at least it gives a little bit of momentum early to sides that were perceived to be weaker.
Is the footy any better as a result? The homogenisation of the competition.
No,
the footy's suffering.
If you don't mind, the footy's been crap.
Well, I don't mind. I mean, you could use any number of words to describe it. Terry, it has.
I mean, there's been some good game. I loved what Essendon did on Saturday afternoon at the MCG. They played a great brand of footy, but that's lesser more than more.
Yeah, I agree.
The North Melbourne game, good on you, North. I mean, you had a win and fantastic. We're not taking that away from you. The effort and the will to want to win was fantastic, but the standard of the game was
Collingwood Western Bulldogs.
Collingwood Western Bulldogs was revolting.
Sydney Melbourne
to watch
wasn't it? Sydney Melbourne wasn't it? The West Coast Fremantle game.
Yeah.
How do you go over there and have 60-55?
Yeah.
How do you get when you've got the defending premiership, defending champion?
Well, we had 14 of the 18 sides unable to score 80 points.
So
14 of the 18.
Okay, so here's the – and you probably – so apologies if you spoke about this last night. You hear from McCafe, Bruce Noe Coffee from McCafe, available 24/7.
Lovely.
How much of this is sheeted home to the coaches?
Well, it all is. Of course it is. I mean, I've been in that seat, and I know exactly. I mean, the game on Friday was just a game of keepings off.
100%.
I've sent teams out to play a game of keepings off.
Well, you've done it, and it was lauded. I mean, it's a historic game.
But so, I mean, I understand where the coaches are coming from, but I'm just from the aesthetics of the game.
So
it's not great.
So Lloydie says last night on Footy Classified, apropos of Essendon, they freed him up.
Yeah.
They freed him up. They went out to a bunch of players, Sheil, McDonald, Tip and Woody, Parrish, several others. Play foot. We're going to extrapolate, beyond because Lloydie sort of just went and they didn't dive deep into it.
Yeah.
But the assumption is, you just go and play to it. Well, there's a couple of things you need to do, but we're going to release the shackles a bit. We're not going to coach you as much as we may have done in the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
Just go and play.
Yeah.
Whatever that really means in 2009. Well, hello.
Great to watch.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And it, relative to the rest of the competition, it was like watching the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah. Look, my biggest issue is, and I think a lot of people from my vintage are that way, and I still love the game. I still love going.
Of course.
Love going every week, still watching all the games as I've done in the past, but we are losing the contest. The contest is going out of the game. The only contest you have now is around a stoppage.
Yep.
Like, we're not kicking to a contest. So the whole contested aspect of our game is now a keepings off aspect of the game. So that's completely changed over, and this is not over a short period of time, this is over a 20-year period of time.
Yep.
We've just taken the contest out of the game. And why have they taken the contest out of the game, the coaches? Because soon as I have the ball or we have the ball, why do we want to give it back to a 50-50 opportunity? So what we will do is we will sort of say, once we've got the ball, we only want it to be 100% in our control, not go back to a 50-50 contest. But from a viewer's point of view, that takes away all the 50-50 contests.
Of course it does.
And that was the game. The whole game was based on, bang, 50-50, whether that's in the air, whether that's down the ground, and you know, a contest between two players. That's all gone.
Terry, in the last three, and this is a very odd rule of thumb to use to illustrate the point.
We're going to be seen as dinosaurs as well. But
No question. Yeah. The last 3 weeks on the front bar, we've had Ross Glendening, Paul Kelly, and we've got Doug Hawkins on tomorrow night, right? Yep. So we've had the opportunity in our pre-show meetings to sit there and look at the highlights of these three blokes. Yeah, well, let's put that one in. Let's have a look.
Yep.
Footballers don't play like those three anymore. They're not actually allowed to play like those three anymore. There's not the space in the room and the license given to players anymore to be like those guys.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that that – you know, Doug Hawkins is a better player than Nathan Fyfe. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, you know, Alex Rance is a better player than, or that Ross Glendening is a better player than Alex Rance. Right? I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying that back in the day, players in your era.
More freedom to express yourself.
There's actually more space.
Yeah.
You had more room.
Yeah.
So the AFL's done a radical overhaul between 18 and 19 to try and give the game back to the players.
Correct.
Hasn't worked. So is it bulletproof? Coaches just find a way straight away to...
Correct. So it was always... I mean, I've been asked the question a couple of times. Who wins, right? Who is going to win the battle? Mm. Is the AFL, with their rulemaking and changing, going to win the battle? Or are the coaches going to win the battle?
Well,
I've said to everyone and all and sundry before we even played a game, the coaches will always win because the AFL have got other things that they're dealing with as well. The coaches are only 24/7 dealing with the game. And then when the actual game starts, when the umpire gets the ball and bounces it, the AFL have no control other than the rules that they've put in. The coaches are completely controlling the game.
Yeah.
So
it's a really good point.
The coaches are always going
to
win.
So Taylor Adams was on the Oval Office last night and had a bit to say about this. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Teams are defending with the ball in hand now as well. So the opportunity to keep the ball off the opposition is a great way to stop them from scoring. If you've got the ball in your hands, then the opposition can't score. And it's slow and it can be boring at times, but it gives you a chance to reset, get your structures right, make sure everyone's in position, you know, players need a breath, take, you know, 10 or 15 seconds, and then take a long down the line option, maybe create a stoppage, reset the game.
I mean, I'm not potting Taylor Adams. I think Taylor Adams is a really refreshing voice. I think you get more out of a Taylor Adams chat than you get out of a lot of other players in the competition. But that just puts me to sleep, even listening to that as a notion. Not what Taylor Adams has said, but the concept around what he's describing.
Well, what he's describing, and if you think about Australian rules footy for 100 years, we weren't professional, so we just played our Indigenous game. But then all of a sudden we become professional and we started looking at other sports and how they had progressed their game.
Yep.
Do you think about what he was just saying then and think about soccer and setting up, knocking it around and setting up when you haven't got that fast break opportunity. That's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
Now, I can remember when I was coaching, saying to my players about exactly what Taylor was sort of saying then about chipping it around, holding it onto the ball. We want to bore them to death.
Yep.
So what the opposition, that is, we want to bore them to death so that all they're basically doing is running up and manning the mark. And what happens is you haven't got the ball in your hands for a long period of time and your mind gets out of the game. We're boring them to death. That's what we're trying to do. But the only problem with that is it bores everyone else to death that's either watching it on the TV or, you know, at the ground watching it over the other side of the fence. That's the issue.
Yeah, the game is lucky that it has such a rusted-on supporter base. It really, really lucky that it's got it. We better get a break out of the way. That wasn't intended, but it's. I think it's a fair conversation. I want to talk to you about Nathan Buckley, apropos of a bit of this. I want to talk to you about the handling of Joe Danner. I want to talk to you also about something that Chris Judd said last night on Footy Classified, which again, Caro wanted to challenge, but they kind of moved through it pretty quickly. I'll get your thoughts on that. There's heaps to get through. Terry Wallace here from McCafe Barista. Made coffee from McCafe, available 24/7.
Well, we know Dusty Martin obviously got a suspension. That one was probably a line ball. I don't think they should be a stark difference in how they're treated, but I actually have no problem with Paddy Dangerfield, if it's a line ball decision, being treated differently to a middle-of-the-run player. I think they get treated differently because they're getting banged into 100 times a game. A normal run-of-the-mill player isn't dealing with sort of physical brutality that Paddy Dangerfield's dealing with week in and week out. Plus, the fans come to watch them play.
So that's Chris Judd last night on Footy Classified. Caro wanted to get back to it. They've obviously got a really tight agenda, so they want to get through a lot of stuff. They don't want to get bogged down or anything. So they moved through this pretty quickly last night. And I was watching the show because I wanted to see what Judd had to say about the Carlton situation. But that, for me, was as big a takeaway as anything.
Was he talking about an elbow to Matthew Pavlich?
No, well, maybe that's a little bit of stored memory. Yeah, well, absolutely.
Yeah, got away with one. Yep. Because, and the fact... Well, I think he was talking about himself, but using his experiences, which we all do. Yep. I'm not saying that badly. I just, that's how we sort of look at things, about, you know, taking our own experiences in the game and putting them into the modern game and, you know, who's around at the moment. So
don't be frustrated if you can't get a call in here, because I'm going to put this in the show a bit later on. I really want to get a sense from people out there whether they agree with Judd or not on this one.
Do you think in your own heart of hearts there should be a different interpretation for different people?
Not in the slightest.
Yeah, I agree.
No, not in the slightest. Yeah. And I can understand where Juddy's coming from on this one. And I agree, they do get special treatment from opposition players. And I agree, people do come to watch these guys play, but they get paid a hell of a lot of money because of their talent. And if they have to earn it a bit harder than others, then so be it. Correct. It doesn't mean they can run around whacking a bloke, and if some fella gets 2 weeks for it and they get a $2,000 fine, everything should be hunky-dory, and we just go on with life as...
Correct.
Except that.
And we've seen it. I mean, so that's why I'm not suggesting that he's necessarily wrong. I mean, we go back to Tommy Mitchell.
Yeah.
And the off-the-ball situation. I mean, if he was Brownlow favourite, does he get off? I think we've seen a few times of recent years where people who are well up in the Brownlow on those 50-50s have been given the benefit of the doubt.
So you think it happens?
I think it happens. Well, I cannot, again, we speak from our own experiences. Mm. I never got suspended at the tribunal at all, but I did go up one time, and I believe that I got off because I'd been up there as a witness about 7 times that season.
Okay.
And they almost, in my mind, almost went, well, you almost owed one. You know, like, so, yeah.
We can understand why you're here.
You've been getting whacked. You've been getting whacked. Okay. You've given one that perhaps you shouldn't have. We'll give you the benefit of the doubt. So I think there's that marginal thing is there. So I'm not suggesting that Juddy's wrong, but I don't think that it should be there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And on the first part of what he said, I don't agree with him. That I imagine that's going to be something that a lot of people want to have a say about, and we'll get to it a bit later on the show. But there's a heap of stuff to talk to Terry about. Terry Wallace in the studio. It is the Subway Lunch Hour. Fall in love with lunch all over again at Subway. 19 fresh new ingredients at participating restaurants. Nick Negroponte is going to join us a bit later on the show just to update the NBA playoffs and where they're at. Some very good news for Ben Simmons. If you're a fan of Simmons and the 76ers, we'll get to that. They're in the middle of game, quite close to the end of their second game in their series against the Brooklyn Nets, of course. So we'll keep an eye on that throughout the afternoon. The next game up, the Clippers taking on the Golden State Warriors. So they lead 1-0 in that series, the champions. Joe Danaher is the source of some conversation at the moment about how best to handle it.
I heard Rodney Eade speak about it.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think Joe has had such an interrupted run. It's the last couple of times that he's tried to get himself up ready to play that it's actually impacted his performance as well. So do I think Joe Danaher is a good player? Absolutely 100% when he's right. But that's been a fair way in the rearview mirror since he's actually been right. So I'm very, very big on the fact that Essendon have just got things right at the moment. So don't mess around with a formula that's okay. Now, they've had McKernan in the forward line. He got hurt. All of a sudden, Brown come in, did a really good job and has been pretty solid over the whole JLT campaign. Probably only lost his spot because they went with the two rucks combination, you know, when Zach Clark came into the side. So that's what pushed one of the talls out of the team. But then McKernan went down, so he comes back in. Brown can't play. Brown had 25 Ps and three goals. So if Danaher comes in, well, one of two, I don't think he's going to ruck coming straight back into the side. So if Clark plays with Bell Chambers, well, Brown's got to go out of the team.
You can't possibly.
It just wouldn't make any sense whatsoever. And he's had so little continuity, and when he's come back, he's looked so far off it. Just get him to play. Yeah. Just go and play VFL.
Exactly.
And it doesn't even matter if it's 3 or 4 weeks, yeah, but just let him get out there first week and impact his game time, or you know, organise his game time. So let's call it 60%, 65%. Yeah. Just get him through. Tick if he gets through. Don't worry whether he gets one kick, five kicks. Tick that box first.
Yep.
Next week, okay, we might be going up to 75, 80%. You know, game time. We need you to start finding a little bit of the footy at that level. Yep, tick that box. Mm. And then if that means he's ready, fine. If it's another week and, you know, we need you to have a really solid performance now, just work him up so that when he's actually ready to come back and play senior football, you're not guessing as a match committee or a coach. He's not guessing whether am I ready or I hope I'm ready. Hope I can do this. You're actually going in, all of you, with the confidence that you can get the job done.
Terry, where do you sit on this notion of enjoying your footy as well? Having your player, you know that you're going to have some players who are just going to, they're so professional and hard-nosed that they're going to push through anything and they're going to produce to the best of their ability. But I imagine you would have played with or coached players who needed to be feeling good about themselves.
Yeah, very much.
To play their best footy.
Very much.
And I think Joe is one of the – I think Danaher's maybe at times felt like he's had the weight of the world on his shoulders, and every time he steps out in recent times, it feels like everyone's on me. You know, if I smile too much, if I kick one out of the full, they're going to boo me and laugh at me.
And I'm carrying.
And I'm exactly.
Carrying injury at the same time, yep. Trying to work through all that. Oh, look, no doubt. I mean, you know, the ability to just feel good about,
good.
Yeah,
exactly.
Feel good about yourself and feel fresh and wanting to be out there rather than, you know, I've got to be out there and I've got to get the job done.
Yeah, and if I bugger up, the world's on me. I mean, we talk about pressure here on this show all the time, thanks to Peerless Products, We Are Air. I feel like he plays, and in recent times, let's just pick a number, the last 10 games he's played at the level, I reckon he's played under undue amount of pressure.
Yeah. And of the last 10 games, how many would have been reasonable games?
Well, I wouldn't suggest
couple.
Many. Yeah, maybe one or two here or there, you know. So if part of that process of – and this whole, I've heard you talk about this before. There's nothing wrong with playing a game or two in the next level down for whatever reason.
No.
It's not – don't be embarrassed. We're not saying you're no good. It's those days have to be over.
Yeah.
There's very few people, I reckon – get through an entire career where that reality, whether it be a test player or an AFL level football or whatever it might be, where that reality doesn't loom large at some stage. There's very few of them, I reckon, get through their careers.
Well, you would play an intra-club without any question or problem at all.
Mm.
Well, the fact that he's just coming back from injury, this is his pre-season. So it's not an intra club.
Exactly.
It's just representing the VFL.
Yeah, exactly. Spot on. He's still wearing the jumper and he's still an Essendon footballer.
Correct.
Hey, footy, golf and plough, the votes to get through. We're going to break out of the way. Nathan Buckley said that – I want you to explain to me what this means. Players are too coachable these days. We played the Taylor Adams stuff a bit earlier and I wonder whether it folds into that.
Yeah, well, Adelaide have said exactly the same thing about their game from round three to round four as well.
Okay, or you can explain to me what that's all about on the other side of this. Terry Wallace in the studio talking footy, back with more after the break.
He at 16, listen to the crowd.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Yeah! Lambert with a setup kick for Reba!
Have you seen anything like that?
Fontapelli, the future star, the present star, steady!
Oh! It's that time of the week again before we get to Nathan Buckley and his comments about players being too coachable. footy golf player over here.
Back to Thursday. Sydney at home, not acceptable. No. Playing against a Melbourne that obviously were desperate, but hadn't had a victory. So a double bogey for the Swans. And well done, Dees, on the board with a birdie. Collingwood and Bulldogs. Well, would have got about a quadruple bogey for the standard of the game, but it was a par for Collingwood and a par for the Bulldogs, because it's about how I expected the game to play out, not the manner in which the game was played.
No, I wonder whether you might have docked him a shot because of the quality of football produced, but you probably can't do
par
it.
Par and par. Yep. Geelong, a bogey. I thought it was a really good standard game.
Yeah.
They got beaten at home, which is unusual for them, but I didn't think it was a double bogey. I thought the opposition was very good. And GWS and Eagle for what was a really solid performance, especially with one of the co-captains going down. Essendon and Eagle for the manner in which they won, as much as anything else, the margin in it, putting it to bed virtually straight away. Brisbane, a double bogey for their performance.
Oh, woeful.
Yeah, they were, but I had a bit of expectation that that's the way that it would play out. I picked Essendon in the game, so that's why it wasn't a triple bogey for me. Port Adelaide at home, a double bogey. Disappointing with the amount of players out. Richmond, I thought that was one of the more meritorious wins. One of those once in a decade type win. So it was an albatross.
Spot on, fair enough.
For the Richmond Football Club. So well done. North Melbourne, a birdie for their performance. I thought it was a pretty evenly matched up game, but Adelaide were non-existent in the game. Double bogey for them.
See, the way they drifted out of that contest was alarming, I reckon.
It's a bit smelly.
Yeah.
A bit smelly. Look, they got one lucky thing. That their draw in the next three weeks is actually okay. Yeah, so they can recover to a degree. But, gee, if they had a tough draw, I think the jungle drums would be really beating over there. West Coast and Fremantle, pretty average game, but a par, you know, just with the way it played out.
Yep.
Fremantle were competitive. West Coast got the job done. Gold Coast, a birdie for their performance, and Carlton, a bogey. Expectation was higher this week, so they had to get a bogey for not being able to get the job done. St Kilda, a birdie, and Hawthorn, a bogey for the final game. So that has three sides at three under, GWS, Geelong, and Gold Coast, which I would never thought. Two under is Brisbane and St Kilda. We have six teams on evens, such as the way the competition's playing at the moment. Collingwood, West Coast, Bulldogs, Port Adelaide, Hawthorn and Fremantle. One over, Carlton and Richmond. Two over, Essendon, but making ground, obviously. Four over, North Adelaide. Five over Sydney and six over Melbourne, just because of the start that they had to the season, and I suppose the expectation of where it was as well.
It's a much better looking ladder than the real one, Terry. I like your ladder much more than the AFL ladder. There's some good performances. There's some bad performances. There's some giant performances around the place. Giant Bicycles Factory back sale on now. Nathan Buckley, we heard from Taylor Adams earlier talking about the state of play. And you referenced the other team that sort of admitted that this happened, the Adelaide Crows, on the weekend.
Yeah.
What does it mean when a coach says that the players are too coachable?
Yeah, well, what it does, I mean, people, not all people, but people like to please. And when you're in a situation, whether it's your parents or your coach, what happens? You want to please them and you want to do and show that you're trying to do everything in your powers to do what they want you to do. But sometimes there's an overcorrection that comes with that. Now, I'll give you an example. I'm coaching Richmond back in the day. We've got Greg Stafford sitting in the goal square at 6'7" or 6'8" or whatever he was. Big, big man. All of a sudden, we're not driving the ball in deep and getting blokes to the front and square. I show vision on the Monday, sort of saying, right, we're just not using the right option all the time. Sometimes, of course, it's right to lower the eyes and go low, but sometimes when we're coming in, we just got to bang it into him and just get numbers to his feet and give him an opportunity. Okay, that's exactly what you do. You go out and train for a little bit of that, but you're trying to train for lowering the eyes sometimes, go in deep. The last thing that they remember is Plough asked us to kick long to Greg Stafford. So we go to the next game and every single ball is dropped on the top of Greg Stafford's head to play the game. So they
They overtake in the information and they overcorrect. And that's exactly what Bucks was talking about with, we got some good results by hanging onto the ball, So all of a sudden they overhang onto the ball. Adelaide said exactly the same. Adelaide believed the week before they played too fast. So what they tried to do was correct that and play with a little bit more control in their game. Well, they played with control. They might have kicked it sideways, backwards, everywhere but going forward in the game. So it's just an overcorrection by trying to please the coaches.
It's fascinating. Language and the messaging you give to players who are under pressure, I imagine, is a very, very important part of coaching.
Absolutely. And then it's hard to in-game. And now, particularly with runners and everything like that, but it's actually hard to recorrect to get it back to a sort of a balance where you want it.
So off the back of that what you've just spoken about there, and bringing what Matthew Lloyd said about what Essendon did, freeing some of their players up against Brisbane, it's all about the balance, right? You want to get the balance right. You want to have them adhering to team rules, but playing.
Yeah, with
the
flair,
freedom
and flair.
Flair.
Yeah.
How hard – you haven't dived into this. You haven't tried to build this from ground up for a while now as a coach. But how difficult do you imagine that would be, getting that balance right?
Extremely difficult.
So difficult.
Well, go back to Dimmer Hartwick and his discussions, and we've all heard them now about where they were and where he was, and he didn't like himself as a person, and that they had over sort of emphasised certain things about how they were doing. Then he went overseas and he come back and just sort of said, well, I'm going to make it fun again. We're just going to allow them to play and actually enjoy each other's company and enjoy training. And like, so getting the balance. And it seems simple, and then you sort of say, well, why wouldn't everyone just...
Well, that was my next question.
Free them up.
Yeah.
Because there's certain things that you know work, and there are other things that don't work. So in the competition at the moment, if you play freelance, right, and give up the ball, we're just talking about going to 50-50s and that sort of thing, you won't win. So control of the football is still paramount, but how do you get control of the football plus free them up to play?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
That is a balance.
Yeah. So my question would be, we're talking about this in a really simplistic form because we've only got a couple of minutes before I have to get a break, but what if you said to you pick five players?
Yep.
Pick five players. You pick Hurley, Hooker, Bagley, the Ridley, and one other, Van Essendon, right? And you say, boys, you're our bedrock. You have to – the other 14 blokes are going to just – we're playing footy.
Ballistic.
We're pinging it all over. We're going to – in inverted commas, we're almost going to make it up as we go along. Whatever they see and whatever they feel, they're going to back themselves to go with, right? But you guys, you're our structure blokes. Nothing can happen unless you blokes do exactly what we need you to do. You can't do what the other blokes are going to do. You're there in case it all goes horribly wrong, and we do – in our fizz and attempt to make things happen, make things up on the fly, it goes wrong, you have to be there to catch the one that comes through. Is that, as a really basic fundamental, can you set it up like that?
Of course you can. You can give certain people license to do certain things within the game that you don't give to other people. No doubt you can do that. But you still have the situation of, Essendon seems to have got it right over the last couple of weeks, but Adelaide just admitted that when they allowed their guys to free up, they kept giving the ball back to the opposition and kept going over their heads. So it's very nice when it works, but if it doesn't work, and St Kilda has said exactly the same. St Kilda put more structure around them because last year they thought they went
too far the other way,
and just kept giving the ball back to the opposition and going straight over their head. So that's where it's
how much of it just comes down to skill, hitting a target,
Well, you're talking about your
hit
team,
the target.
Your team at the moment. Your team wins on the weekend if they hit the target more regularly.
Hit the target. If you hit the target, anything's possible if you use the footy well, I reckon.
Therefore is where the confidence factor comes into it again.
Geez.
So all of a sudden Essendon got their confidence back the week before. They come out onto the MCG. Everything works right in the first 15 minutes for them. They're banging the ball around and hitting all their targets, and up they go.
And they're right.
Carlton have to win the game. This is, you know, a matter of urgency. So everyone's in that tightness and panic mode. Oh. So I've just got to hit my target. That's a lot harder under that circumstance to actually play footy.
We need a break. We're going to go and throw up, Terry. I'm feeling sick again. Terry Wallace here, rushing up to the top of the hour, Plough. I don't know how that's happened. We got to get to the Plough low. So points categories.
Yeah, very quickly. Look, I'll leave the totals. We'll put them on social media. But for the players of the round, one vote to Dylan Grimes. Fantastic leadership and held him up in the last quarter. Two to Seb Ross for the Saints. Really controlling game. Three to Patrick Cripps. Not his fault that the Blues didn't get over the line. I thought he just about carried them on his back. Four votes to Lachie Whitfield, GWS, magnificent game, and five votes to Anthony McDonald, Tippin' Woody.
Righto.
First year trades, one vote to Lachie Neal, still another 40 possessions, but not quite as dominant as recent weeks. Two to Dylan Scheel in the same game. Three votes to Jasper Pittard, North Melbourne. Four votes to Jared Pollock, North Melbourne, and five votes to Tom Scully. Welcome back, Tommy. Fantastic performance for the Hawks on the weekend. So that's the those ones. The under 50 games, which is always the most difficult to fit everyone in. One vote to Ollie Florent for his game up in Sydney. I thought it was just about the best game he's played. Two votes to Sam Walsh for his performance for the Blues. Three votes to Jack Ross for Richmond, first up. What an effort for a first up effort. Four votes to Rowan Marshall for St Kilda. Thought he took on both the Hawthorn Ruckman and beat them in that particular duel. Five votes to Jacob Hopper. Dominant performance in a big, big win for GWS.
Terry, I like the take on it all. There might be one or two that people may challenge you on the way through. There are stories that aren't just about wins and losses. They're bigger than that. They feature human rights issues and much more significant stories than just who won and who lost. We know the operation of Godolphin. They've contributed enormously to global horse racing. We know the name Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. It's been a quest of his to win the Melbourne Cup, which they managed to do for the first time after 20 years of attempting it with Cross Counter, having had a lot of, you know, near misses. They finally got there. But there's been a case being brought against the Sheikh and his racing operation, Godolphin, based on something that's happening to him much nearer to home. And when we finish having a chat about this, I'd love to hear from you, 1-300-736-736. Is it something that matters to you? And I'll get you to look at it through the prism of what's happened recently to Darren Weir. He mucks up with his treatment of horses, cops 4 years. If you don't know this story, you're about to maybe have a slightly different perspective on the contribution being made to global racing and racing here in Australia. After it, Lisa Bloom is a US-based attorney for the Bloom firm, New York Times best-selling author, and they've brought a case against Godolphin, against Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum over in the States. She's going to tell us why. Lisa, thanks for your time.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
I saw there's been some documentaries about what's going on in the family world of Sheikh Maktoum, but it hasn't necessarily been drawn, there hasn't been a line drawn between it and his right to do what he's been doing in the world of horse racing globally, and we know that it touches many, many different continents around the world. Can you tell us what you and your firm, the action that you're bringing, the case that you're looking to bring against the operation?
Yes, absolutely. So for those who are not aware, Sheikh Mohammed, who is essentially the king, the ruler of Dubai, and the prime minister of the United Arab Emirates, has abducted, kidnapped, and held hostage his own adult daughter for over a year. Her name is Princess Latifa, Sheikha Latifa. And she recorded a heartbreaking video before she made her escape attempt a year ago and asked her friends to release it if her escape failed. Her escape did fail, and so the video has been released. 60 Minutes Australia did a very powerful documentary, which is available on YouTube, about this situation. But according to Latifa, and I think it's important to point out that Sheikh Mohammed does not deny any of this. He simply refuses to talk about it. According to her, She lived life in a gilded cage, always watched, always followed. She was not allowed to leave and go anywhere without minders and handlers following her. She was not allowed to leave Dubai and study medicine as she wanted to. And so when she was 16, she attempted to escape. She was caught. She was brought back to Dubai, held in solitary confinement for 3 years, beaten. And then when she was 25, she spent the next 8 years plotting her next escape. And that's what she tried to do last year. She went out with her best friend, Tina, on a dinghy to a boat in international waters with a U.S. captain and a U.S. flag. And the plan was to go to India, where she would get on a plane and come to the U.S. and seek asylum. But instead, the Emirati and the Indian militia forces boarded the boat. They beat up the crew, the captain, Tina, Latifa, and everybody on it, threatened to kill them, abducted them, took them back to Dubai, where they were held for 10 days. There was some international media outcry, and everybody was released except Latifa. She's been held for over a year. Now, what does this have to do with horse racing? Well, when I heard this story, I'm a women's rights attorney. I'm in the middle of a sexual harassment trial right now in Los Angeles, and that's primarily what I do, are women's rights cases. I just refused to sit silently by and let an adult woman be held captive by her father, her only crime being that she wanted to live her own life. And I think the good people of Australia, and I recently took a trip to Australia, had a wonderful time. My daughter lives there. I think you feel the same way that we do in the States about women's rights, and that every adult woman should have her right to live her own life. Meanwhile, Sheikh Mohammed, this very wealthy man, has had no consequences at all. So I looked into what does he have going on in the U.S., and as you point out, he owns Godolphin. He's had a number of horses in the Kentucky Derby and in related events. And I looked up the rules and discovered that the Kentucky Racing Commission has the legal power to ban anyone who is, quote, undesirable and lacking in integrity from horse racing. Well, what is more undesirable and lacking in integrity than a man who would have his own adult daughter abducted, beaten, and held hostage, where she can't ever call a friend, go online, nothing. She's just held captive. I think he treats his own horses better than he treats his daughter. So we filed a complaint today to ban him from horse racing in Kentucky, ban him from the Kentucky Derby, ban him from the Oaks, anyone associated with him and his horses, because he is undesirable and lacking in integrity.
Lisa, what sort of support do you think you'll get from, I don't know where this action needs to where it needs to be heard for it to take place over in America, whether racing officials and racing authorities over there can do it, or whether it needs to be influence exerted from governments to make this happen. But who needs to be hearing this for him to be denied something that he clearly loves, take something away from him, mm-hmm. so that he'll listen to voices and views like yours? Who needs to intervene?
What you're doing is very important, frankly, bringing public attention to this. We know that the government of Dubai is sensitive to media and public pressure. You know, I've been to Dubai. I had a great time. I would never go now. I'm calling for a boycott of Dubai. How could I possibly go to a country where this is allowed? And by the way, it's not just Princess Latifah. Her sister Shamsa years ago also tried to escape, also was dragged back, and has not been heard from since.
Lisa, is it beyond dispute? You said before that he's not making any public comments about the allegations that are being levelled against him. Is it actually beyond dispute what is being alleged against Sheikh Mohammed?
It is beyond dispute. There were 10 witnesses on the boat when the forces came on and assaulted her at gunpoint and dragged her off and beat her and dragged all of them off too. They all say the same thing. She released a video. I encourage everybody, if you are interested, to just Google Princess Latifah, Latifa. You can find her video on YouTube. You can find the wonderful Australia 60 Minutes report on this. The BBC did a one-hour documentary where they interviewed all of the witnesses. The New York Times has done a lengthy write-up, USA Today. This is really not in dispute.
Yep.
He simply refuses to talk about it, and he hopes that we will just all forget about it.
Why? Can you tell? I'm only on the very edge of this story, I must admit. So when I saw your tweet mm-hmm. go out this morning, I started to kind of read a bit more about it, and I'll certainly learn more about it after the conversation with you. But I noticed that the former mm-hmm. Irish president, Mary Robinson, has flown the flag in support of the Godolphin operation and the man who sits at the head of it all. Can you explain to me why she would do that?
Well, it is very disappointing. So after the BBC documentary came out and a lot of pressure was being put on him to tell us, is she alive or dead? Sheikh Mohammed released three photographs with Ireland's Mary Robinson, who was a good family friend of one of his wives, Princess Haya. He has six wives and 30 children. And Princess Haya had apparently flown Mary Robinson out, and they had lunch, and they took three still pictures of Mary Robinson, who then issued a statement saying, well, this seems to be a family matter. While she was roundly criticized, really by everyone, for not standing up for this poor woman, and then she said, well, she does seem to be in a very vulnerable position, and I have nothing else to say on the matter, and she's refused to speak of it since.
Gee whiz.
So, unfortunately, I think Ms. Robinson, who has had a lifetime of some very good work, but I think she was co-opted by a family that she's very friendly with. And listen, they could easily prove me wrong by allowing Latifa to speak publicly. Have her come out and say that we're wrong, but of course they don't. So we have these three pictures, still pictures, where Latifah's looking kind of off camera. Latifah said the last time, you know, she was beaten and drugged, and she does look like she's drugged in these pictures. It's very, very sad. That was December. We haven't heard from her since.
Lisa, how much of an impact can social media have in a situation like this? Well, I don't know whether you're aware of it, but recently in Australia, we've had one of our really kind of prominent former football, soccer players in Australia lead publicly a campaign to have an ex-Bahraini international who was being held against his will and in the eyes of many illegally in a Thai prison, in an Indonesian prison, I should say. He led what was a really high-profile media campaign with enormous social media influence and involvement. The footballer was Hakeem El Arabi, if you want to have a look at it. Craig Foster was the footballer in the middle of it all. And I noticed as part of your some of your correspondence, there's hashtags that are attached to this. You clearly want to make a lot of noise about this and make this an international campaign. How powerful can that...
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a great question. We all have the power on social media. Many people come to me and say, Lisa, can you do this or can you do that? And I said, well, yes, but you can too. We all have the power. Almost everybody is on social media. On Twitter, I'm Lisa Bloom, B-L-O-O-M, and I started the hashtag Free Latifa. If you raise your voice, others will follow you. Each of us has tremendous power in social media, and it's the only way. Listen, I'm not getting a dollar for this. I'm doing this because I'm just outraged about it. I cannot sit silently by while my sister, half a world away, is being held captive. She needs to be freed, and we need to put pressure on this man. You know, it's just not okay. Just because he's rich and powerful, he cannot hold his female family members captive. And most of us in the world feel that way. So please, let's raise our voices. And if we can go after his horse racing operations in Australia and some attorney there wants to pick up the cause and join with me, I would be very proud and pleased to do that with you.
Well,
I just came up with this creative idea, but I think it's a good idea. I think it may work, but if not, at least I'm raising my voice and I'm doing what I can do. And these are the moral moments that define who we are.
We're talking to Lisa Bloom, U.S. attorney, who's looking to bring this case against, you know, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum and Godolphin, and to get the women, the girls in his family, a life they want to lead, free enough to do that. We have a text machine in front of us here, Lisa, which is live, and we see what people are thinking as we're having the conversation. I think you'd be enthused. There's a lot of people who are saying that this is a disgrace and something needs to be done about this. I think we'd like to think of ourselves in Australia as a pretty fair country, and I think that a lot of people who know a bit about this story or hearing a little bit about it for the first time can see just how unjust and unfair this situation is. Where to next week, just before I let you go? Where are you at? Where are you at in terms of bringing this case? We might have lost her by the sounds of it. International telecommunications occasionally are what they need to be, and on other occasions they're not. I think we might have lost her. Thumbs down. She's gone. Lisa Bloom's gone. We got enough out of it. We'll watch this case with a... Well, I'll certainly watch this case with a great deal of interest. What the question? There's a couple of questions. Does anyone care about this? I mean, we love our horse racing. I think by and large we've liked what you know, these internationals are brought to a race like the Melbourne Cup. We certainly roll the red carpet out as a nation, don't we? I mean, they are fated when they come to Australia. It's added a dimension internationally to the race that is undeniable. But if you're interested in this as a story, and you can see the bigger picture at play here, should our doors remain open to a man who's doing this to his daughter and has done it to another one of his daughters? Is it something that you think needs to cross over into the world of sport? Are these the sorts of stories that we need to be taking notice of every now and again? We don't do a lot of this sort of stuff on this radio station, but every now and again, this is big ticket stuff. You know, the Melbourne Cup and the commitment that Godolphin have made globally to dominating horse racing while they're basically given tacit approval by authorities that have to, you know, give them the green light and allow them into their nations to do what they're doing. We turn a blind eye to the stuff that's taking place, you know, behind closed doors back home. Are you comfortable with this? If it's something that you want to join in on, 1-300-736-736. If not, we'll get a wriggle on. No problems with any of that. But it's a pretty significant story, and it's one that's going to play out, and it might have a significant impact down the track on races like the Melbourne Cup and some of our other Blue Ribbon events in the world of horse racing in Australia. Lines are open. If you want to join in and share your views on any of that, feel free. Ashley Brown's in the studio. He's looking at me like he can't hear anything and he can't say anything. Is that microphone working for you?
Hello, hello.
Oh, God, I can hear you loud and clear. Beautiful. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello, I'm just here.
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey, if you can't hear me, just take the headset off. You'll be able to hear me loud and clear. Are you well?
I'm very well.
I want to talk to you a moment about this four-year deal for Jugger O'Meara and long-term contracts, whether we're getting any closer to knowing whether they're a sensible way of list management and securing players in a moment, and if there are any concerns about giving a player like O'Meara a four-year deal. We'll have a chat about that. But the game's in focus, the standard of football and scoring's in focus. Is a one-point bonus for kicking 100 points, win or lose, is it a pretty straightforward solution to opening the game up and encouraging teams to score? Which is what 666, quick kick-ins, 50-metre penalty. Everything was designed to free up scoring, and yet seemingly after 4 weeks, nothing's had the desired effect.
Well, I would say the way the AFL are thinking now, Andy, that everything's on the table. So
just the one point, the bonus point.
Yeah, I need to think about it a bit more because it's just a question without notice almost. But it's worth a discussion, is it? It happens in a lot of other sports. There's bonuses for
nothing changes.
Scoring.
Like you still win or lose, you still get the same percentage. Things may if you have a team that's somebody's proposed that you may have a team that's won less games at the end of the season, finishing higher than another because they've been a free scorer even in defeats. That becomes problematic, but not insurmountable, I reckon. I think maybe win-loss is still a determinant, but the bonus point becomes a tiebreaker if you're in a logjam between teams who have had the same number of wins as you. I think that might be a way around that. I don't think you want a team finishing higher than another for having won fewer games. That would be unlikely, by the way, to happen, but mathematically it's quite possible.
But then percentage is also the tiebreaker between teams sometimes.
Yes, it is.
For teams that have won the same amount of games.
That's a very good point you raise.
A percentage is a byproduct of scoring. Scoring and not conceding scores.
Yeah, that's right. It's also rewards defence.
Yes.
Yeah. Nathan's in Perth. I appreciate you three blokes for hanging on because we've had to talk some tennis, and I know you're pretty keen to have a chat about this. Nathan, the bonus point, is it worth any thought whatsoever?
I don't know about the bonus point, mate, but I think instead of a bonus point, maybe award an extra percent in your percentage four. So does that make sense? So
yeah, it does. Yeah, like, no. Yeah, you give him an extra 5%.
Score, well, I don't even think 5%, just 1%, because in the last few years, teams have made the finals based on, you know, I think it was only a couple of years ago, someone made the finals based on 0.2%. So if you give every team 1% for every time they score over 100, that means that they'll get 10, like if they have 10 games over 100, they'll have 10 bonus points. 10 bonus percent.
Something like this, I reckon.
Which I think.
Yeah. Oh, look, this is something like this that doesn't affect the integrity of the game. It encourages what we all want to see, I think. I don't think anyone goes to the footy to see 60 v 50. Do we? Does anyone enjoy that? Does anyone really like that sort of footy?
Oh, if you win, you might enjoy it.
Yeah, true. But you'd still enjoy it if you're 115 to 110.
If you're neutral, you'd want to, if you're neutral, you like high scoring footy. High scoring footy is hard to watch if you've got not emotionally invested in the result.
True.
It can be.
Thanks, Nathan. Different way of getting to the same solution, I reckon. Nick's in Mernda. Just whip through two more, Ash. I know I want to talk to you. Your time's very valuable. You didn't come in here to do this. Nick's in Mernda. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, Murray. Mate, all these years I thought you were a good Carlton supporter, but, mate, this idea, you're going to consign us to 19th, maybe even 20th.
I'm just proving to the world, Nick, that I can see the world through impartial eyes.
Oh, jeepers. That would, we might as well just get the spoon and give Adelaide our number one pick for the next 5 years.
It is. Some people are on your page. Somebody extending your point. I know you're probably slightly tongue-in-cheek, but some people are saying it does it rewards good teams. Well, so be it. You want good teams rewarded. I want good teams to be rewarded. Don't we want to reward good teams?
This is the old Carlton supporter and you're coming out.
Well, I actually love footy. I just love footy. And
it's worth discussion because everything the AFL is on the table. And they put out the things that the 666 and a few other things they came up with. I did see it. I don't remember. There was like a list of 40 suggestions at the competition committee.
Yeah, that's right.
Or not that the David Rath, James Podziadli group within the AFL came up with. And
that might have gone, yeah.
And I reckon there was a bonus point, some sort of bonus point was one of the several that was thrown up.
All the ones we brought in, coaches go, nah, I can get around that. And they get around it. This one, coaches go, ooh.
No, no getting around it.
No getting around this. We've got to score 100 points, boys. We're in the chase now. You know, we're chasing points. We need to go. Come on, let's go. You know, get on our bikes and have a crack here. There's no getting numbers behind the footy and getting the bonus point, shutting it down, chipping it sideways all day.
Yeah. No, there will be games where teams on 85, 90 points with 3 or 4 minutes to go and here we go, fellas.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. You're 72 at three-quarter time. How good's this going to be? And you might be, the scenarios, if you're a fan of it, you start to create all sorts of scenarios in your own mind that convince you it's a good idea. John's in Greensboro. Last one on this for the time being. Hi, Johnny.
How you going, Murray? Look, rightly or wrongly, we're 4 games into the season and we're already talking about changing rules. Now, there's something wrong with the game where you're always looking to change the rules because the way it's been coached, the aesthetic of the game. I just think you've just got to leave it alone because it doesn't matter what you do, the coaches are going to find a way to be economic with their players, to be defensive or otherwise. You've just got to leave the game alone because it's starting to look ridiculous. You look at the World Game, I mean, they changed the offside rule slightly when they brought the man online, and there was a huge thing about that. And so let's just leave it alone. You just got to leave. If the game is good, leave it alone and let it.